Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Doing good.
Good, good. Well, you were the first on the call, Colin. Greetings, Michelle. Welcome.
Morning. Morning, everybody.
Brandy is new to the program and welcome. Brandy just sent me a fairly lengthy email with some things that we're going to work through. And it's your first time on the call, and you were the first one on the call. So we're going to start with you and then we'll go to the next thing. So
Okay.
maybe just if you would give me a kind of distillation of that email. I did kind of peruse it and it's fairly involved. And I know that you've got a couple of things going on. This is a safe place, by the way. Everything's confidential. Yes, it's being recorded, but it is only recorded for access for you guys later when you want to review anything that's coming through. So, this is a place where you can share the things that scare you the most, that make you the most upset, and all that stuff. And we'll be here to support you. So that's true for all of us. So I understand that you had, just for context, everybody, Brandy works in a public school system. Her work is primarily focused on actually helping to get schools built. And therefore, she's kind of in a government context. So there's a lot of complexity there. And there was a recent sort of accusation that was disproven that she was guilty of some sort of racial misconduct in some way, and they investigated and they found there was no evidence of that. And so she's dealing with sort of a team of people that are pretty sour against her, and she's trying to figure out, how do I get here? How do I get out of it? And that's kind of the large context for anybody who's interested. Did I get that fairly close, Brandy, to write?
Absolutely. You said it way faster than I could have because I probably would have embellished it with a little more angry words.
Yeah, I know this is intense, and it's really, really frustrating. And I just want you to know that, reading what I read, if I had been in your shoes, I just would have been furious, and I would have felt so kind of betrayed and confused. And I just want you to know that I can't say I've been in the exact situation, but I've been in variations of that situation where I feel deeply misunderstood. And it's not an uncommon experience for leaders to feel really misunderstood. So let's just dive in a little bit to talk about what can we actually do about it. And so the first thing is kind of mindset. The first thing I would say about the mindset is this is now the time where you've got to begin to clear all of the personal hurt that you have suffered as a result of this. And when I say clear, I don't mean get over it. I mean, make sure you discharge it in ways that it doesn't show up in the conversations you've got to have next.
Actually, I've already done that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, good. Great.
I
Yeah,
interrupted you.
if you've already done that, awesome.
If you read the document, you can see that I interrupt people a lot. It's just because I get really excited and I want to share my thoughts.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. So I think the next step is, who are the key people that you think are behind the scenes, sort of sowing seeds of discontent and narratives about you that are not true?
Who do I believe it is?
Yeah.
Oh, so I remember talking to you when we first started chatting about me joining this. I made the mistake of insulting somebody like in my first week here when I started like a year ago, August. It was such an offhanded comment that I didn't think that it resonated as deeply with her. But in speaking with my secretary, who has since left only because she got a promotion, she basically gave me some insight that this woman, her name is Sandy. Before I got here, she was the, my secretary said it, she was the neck that turns the head.
Oh,
So,
good. Yeah.
yeah, so she was the one that basically everybody went to. So she had all this power.
Yeah.
And so I got here, and basically, I've done her job. I've done everybody's job in that department. But I'm in this job now. I'm in this position, and this is the position I want to be in. So my secretary explained it that Sandy was maybe intimidated or concerned that because I know more, however you want to look at that, that somehow she would no longer be the neck that turns the head, or the person, the go-to person, the that everybody would be turning to. So based on this tiny little remark that the filing structure could be a little bit more intuitive, that set this smear campaign that's been going on for 12 months. So every lady in her department is basically wrote a letter saying that I have was racist against them. So I'm in Silicon Valley, and I'm in the lower economic area of San Jose. So the demographics here are primarily Asian, Spanish, and then a mixture of, like, say, white or black or other racial things. So that entire department is predominantly Asian. And so they basically all, and when I'm saying they, I mean the ladies, not the Asians.
It's all right. You're safe here.
Yeah. I'm just trying to be clear. Yeah,
we're not going to, you can speak your mind freely, and there's no judgment, and it's okay. I know what it is to work in those contexts, and every single word is very heavily weighted. So
it is very, very scrutinized. So basically, I mean, I'm not welcome in their trailer because we're in construction. Even though I'm in a school district, I'm in a trailer because we're basically the construction side. They're in a trailer. This district prides themselves on equitable parity, and their trailer looks like a bungalow, and mine looks like it's 40 years old and it doesn't have any running water. They have a full kitchen and a storeroom and a bathroom, and we have to walk like 150 feet to go to a trailer with toilets in it. And so it's just weird, the dynamics between our two departments, but we are overseen by one person, and he's sort of also an absent leader. And I think that's kind of why Sandy thinks that, like, she's the manager that everyone should be going to and not me. I could really care less who anybody goes to, as long as the job gets done and it gets done correctly. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. So you made a comment a year ago, and you've been being punished for it ever since, which, by the way, you are a case study in why I do what I do for a living.
Yep.
Because all of us have made comments that we don't even know have huge ripple effects on emotional wake, and no one traces it down for us to tell us what it was or how it was. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. So just know you're in good company, and it's why I'm able to do what I do for a living, because I can help people like this. So the first thing that you need to do is identify who you think that person is. And it sounds like you know who the neck is that's turning the head or wants to. And it sounds like everybody takes their marching orders from her. So she is the informal influencer and leader who has the most credibility and relationships built. And she will be the one to determine your future. She has that much power.
Yep.
And whether she should or whether she shouldn't is irrelevant. Whether she's someone you respect and think should doesn't matter. None of that's relevant. The only thing that's relevant is whether you have an opportunity to have a functioning working relationship. And the way you do that is you have a conversation with her where you sit down and you say, hey, it's very clear to me that however I entered this organization, I entered on the wrong foot. And it has made things difficult for everybody. And my interest in this conversation is to see if there's any chance that we could repair this so that our lives get better and easier. Are you up for that conversation?
Am I or is she?
No, that's how you would ask that. You would literally say, so you would state what you think happened. You would not say it's made it hard on me. You'd say it's made it harder for everybody. Meaning you don't just want to say, like, this has been really hard on me, because they don't care that it's hard on you. They're like, good. We're glad it's hard on you.
Yeah,
our job is to make you miserable. And we want to make it our life's mission to destroy you. So that's why you say, I came in a way that put us on the wrong foot. And so you're owning a part of it. It doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong. It just, you own it as a way to see if there's even a chance to build a bridge. Because there are two ways this goes. One is the person is direct and honest with you and says, no, you screwed up. We don't like you. We think you're a terrible person. We're going to try to destroy you. Good luck. And that would be like awesome if she would tell you that directly. I had a guy actually tell me that once. That was awesome. I was like, thank you. And it was literally like, he was like, if you're loyal to me, I'll reward you. If you're disloyal to me, I'll destroy you. And I was like, that was fantastic. Most people do it indirectly. So, yeah. So the first thing is just to get at like, A, what happened? That's the first block of the conversation. I got things off on the wrong foot. That's made it more difficult than it needs to be for everybody. Two, my interest in the conversation is to see, is there a chance that I could repair this so that our work is easier for everybody? Again, you're linking the reason you want to do this is for that higher purpose, which is I want life to be better for all of us. So like it's a way to appeal to the fact that it's actually hard work to hate someone. It's actually hard work to think about how to destroy someone. So yeah. If there's a chance that I could like alleviate you of the burden of trying to destroy me, which is extra work in your day, you know, that's the subtext that I'm saying. It's like, are you open to a conversation about that? So that's the opening salvo where you start the conversation with, here's how I got here. Here's why I want to have the conversation. And then you ask permission. And it's the ultimate sign of respect that just says, is that something you'd be open to having a conversation about? So that's a meta conversation. Meta conversation is a conversation about a conversation. So I'll just pause there. Does that make you want to throw up in your mouth a little when I suggest this strategy?
No, it's actually quite validating. I've been just trying to figure out how to get her because we are union and because no matter what I have said or what I have done, in even the last few months has been so sort of taken out of context and used against me. I'm concerned that if I approach her, it'll be considered retaliation for filing the letter. So I kind of want to wait for the smoke to clear a little bit before I can approach her.
So here's a third option. Is there an independent party, like an HR rep or a boss or anybody who could be present for the conversation so that they feel protected?
Yeah. So I was thinking about asking HR, because like I said, our leader is absent and he's basically I have a great uncle who is a retired four-star admiral from the military. And he always used to say, when you let the sailors drive the ship, they start thinking they're captain. And so it kind of reminds me of this situation. Yeah. He's just letting her do what she wants. And so she thinks she's the director of the program.
And I'm afraid to say, I'm not afraid. I'll just tell you right now, she is the director.
Yeah.
And so you treat her accordingly.
Yeah.
You would relate to her and speak to her as if you're a subordinate, even though you're not.
Like I'm the subordinate. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so that's how you begin to repair and restore the relationship, is you come from a place of subordination initially.
Okay.
Because until or unless you repair that, and right now she's feeling very justified, she's very angry, she's feeling very threatened, she strikes me as deeply immature, and so you're going to have to be the bigger person, and the bigger person ultimately takes a lot more shit for a period of time. Now, there's a window beyond which I would tell you you couldn't and shouldn't take that, but initially I'm going to encourage you to receive some of that so that you can see if there's even a chance to level set. It is possible there is no opportunity for that. It is possible she is so entrenched and there's no chance that you're going to repair it. And at that point, we'll reassess it. But all I'm trying to do is get you to have the initial conversation. Once you have that conversation, you'll come back to me. We'll have more data to work with. And we'll be able to assess, does she mean what she says? Is she actually playing you out a little bit longer? Is there any games being played? We'll be able to vet that out, and I'll help you navigate how to play those games alongside her. We will outsmart her
outside my door right now. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's in the lobby. Okay, well, we'll just talk quieter.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
You have earphones?
Not with this system. It shuts the whole thing down when I plug more. I have a Mac and there's only like one.
We'll just turn my volume down.
I did. I was like, did you see the look on my face? I'm like, who's here? It's a trailer. It's basically paper thin walls. Sorry.
I see. Okay, good. So does that make sense? Does that sound like a good starting point? So I would for sure reach out to HR. And I would say when you talk to HR, make sure you know, like, the most important thing to me is that she feels safe in the conversation, that she understands I am not here to do anything other than see if I can rebuild. Mm-hmm. And that's the only agenda and that's the only objective. And make sure that feels really safe to her. And if you reach out to her, you'd say, I want HR presence so that you feel safe with me, because I'd like to have a conversation that's constructive and generative. Let me know when you'd be available. And if you'd rather not HR be there, I'm comfortable with that too. It's really whatever's comfortable for you.
Okay.
But I'd like to see if I can repair anything that I broke. Okay. And that way you prepped her. She understands your intention. She's been given choices about how she can interact with you. And then we'll see if we can get you an audience. Okay. And then the main thing is to just come with that. Like, how would you talk to a supervisor? And she'll probably irritate you to no end. So just be prepared to be really irritated by how she speaks to you, because it'll probably be condescending. It'll probably be very self-righteous and largely unjustified. But the more you can manage your emotional reaction to the way she shows up, the more credibility you have a shot at getting built back up. Because right now you're operating with no credibility. They stole all your credibility from you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to bracket that. I want to make sure I get to some others. We can come back to you in a little bit. Any other quick questions before I move on to the next thing? Next person?
I'm good.
Okay, for now, I'll come back to you in a bit. Awesome. Thank you for that. Thank you for all the context you sent to help me understand where you were. And I'm so sorry you're going through that. Colin, how you doing? What's the latest, man?
Things are good. Hey, everybody. Brandy, what a crazy situation. So yeah, my heart goes out to you as well. My goodness, good luck. kind of my issues with a couple of employees kind of pales in comparison to it, but you know, we're all in our own world, right? And we all have our own own things to deal with. So Shane, go ahead.
I just wanted to follow up really quick on, did you have the conversation with the employee who has been most difficult?
Yes. And so to bring kind of everybody up to speed, this employee has taken liberties and really exercised her authority, which she has not been granted officially, and likes to really control things. She recently had a life-changing move to a new city. And so we saw this pattern develop about a year and a half ago, and we tried to really work with her, and she did a lot of self-reflective work and so forth. But as soon as things kind of got a little bit uncertain in her life, it seems like she's reaching around and trying to control certain things, and that is the people that are directly around her. She's a high performer. She's really good technically in her job, but none of her teammates, that she works with about seven other individuals, really like working with her. She's very nitpicky. She comes off condescending. She comes off as their boss, and she's not their boss. So I took your advice, Shane. I started the conversation off with the vernacular that you had recommended, that her communication style is ballistic and that it is really eroding and destroying her credibility. I asked her kind of what her, you know, what could be the catalyst or what her kind of potential, you know, reaction or solutions could be to this. And, you know, she really just talked in circles pretty much the entire time. We talked through a couple specific examples, and one of the difficulties of this is that she's not necessarily wrong. It's just the way that she's going about it. I mean, you know, part of the reason that we're here is for communication style, and her communication style is just, it just sets people off and it turns people away. So there's nothing that we can really gravitate towards or cling on to that's, you know, that's fireable or, you know, in anything along the lines that is erroneous or really, really bad. It's just nobody really likes working with her. And we've tried to kind of bolster her up over the past, you know, 6 months, because she really reached out and said, I need that validation. I need to know that I'm doing a good job and so forth. And so we kind of took that strategy over the past 6 months, and it's really backfired on us because now she comes back and says, well, people tell me that I'm great and people tell me that I'm this, so I should be the boss, or I should be above this person, I should be better than this person, I am better than this person. And it's just creating this kind of storm of, okay.
Sorry, I just want to capture something before you move on. Sure. So it absolutely is a fireable offense. Okay. If you wanted to. And sure. And here's how. You put everything you're talking about in the category of executive presence.
Okay.
So you want to be higher up? You want more power, influence, and authority? Let me tell you what happens the higher you get in any organization. You must demonstrate and display impeccable executive presence. And it's this very soft, amorphous category that is essential for good leadership. Executive presence is your job as you become a manager. Not even the tasks you have, not even the things you're accountable for, because your executive presence is what determines whether you have credibility, which determines whether you can get your job done. The fact that we are having this conversation, that it's escalated to the level of the COO, should put you on high alert that something about your executive presence is not being experienced the way you want it to. So don't think for a moment that this is not a serious conversation that puts you on effectively a 90-day PIP if you wanted to. And then you define executive presence, high level of self-awareness, ability to manage emotions, ability to communicate respectfully, ability to communicate with clarity. Just lay those four things out and grade her on those things. Let her know you will need to demonstrate high levels of ability in all four of these areas. Right now, the only feedback we're getting is that you are not showing up on these four areas, or whatever you want to say, or two of them are not showing up. It doesn't really matter. The point is that you can create criteria that are soft metrics that help an employee understand it's not some amorphous thing called culture. It's literally words and behaviors that you have control over as an executive. You have full control over your words and your actions. And tone is as critical as content. Yeah. So the famous phrase, the medium is the message. If I say to you, oh, Colin, you're doing a really great job. Boy, I'm really, really so glad I hired you. That's the exact opposite tone of the content. If you put that in writing, I said he did a great job, and I'm really glad we hired him. But that's not at all what I said. What I said was, you're a screw up, and I regret that I had hired you because I said it with sarcastic tone. Yeah. So understand that hostility, contempt, sarcasm, caustic, ballistic tone, any of those words, these are good words, by the way, to write down and use so that people understand. Like, I don't care what words you said. If the tone was hostile, if it was caustic, if it was ballistic, if it was sarcastic, those are all tones that are unacceptable in executive presence. There may be companies out there that gladly reward executives like that. We're not one of them. So that's that. So does that make sense? How you could
create
some performance standards, some metrics, so that she understands. And anybody who's like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, my tone. I mean, my gosh, when my daughters were seven, they understood tone.
Sure.
Everybody understands tone. An eye roll is tone. And a good parent will catch that stuff and be like, no, don't roll your eyes at me. Because you're communicating a huge amount of indifference and dismissal and invalidation.
Yeah.
So not okay. That would be the other thing. Dismissal, invalidation, those kinds of things are also like, you'd want to find like, what are those things that you notice she's doing in word and deed that lead people to conclude these things about her? And then her to understand it is your responsibility to manage your own tone. And we would love for you to be wildly successful here and climb the ranks and get into positions of power and influence, as long as you demonstrate the skills that is required of a manager. And we're not talking about your ability to do a spreadsheet or your ability to make sure things happen on time. We're talking about your ability to relate to humans, because that's what managers and leadership is.
That definition of executive presence, you did such a nice job defining it. Is that somewhere I can find that? Is that in the module?
Unfortunately, that was just me off the cuff. this is recorded, and this is
okay.
About
yeah, the 26th. I'll go back and look at it.
But the 20 minute marker is where this is. But
yep.
I'm happy to repeat anything you want to.
No, I'll go back in the recording. That's fine.
The reality is this about executive presence. It's meant to be a catch-all basket so that you have shared language to talk about a category that isn't as obvious for most people.
Okay.
And it's a way to say it's just like culture or values. Culture and values applies to everybody, but then you as an organization, if you wanted, you could develop what you call leadership competencies, mm-hmm. which are like, so these are the written agreements we have as our entire company. Here are the values, the vision, the behaviors we expect of each other. Everybody, I don't care what role you're in.
Yeah.
Then we have these other values or expectations called leadership competencies. And one of the competencies that we require of our leaders is a category called executive presence. You might have another category called creativity. You might have another category called accountability. You might have another category, called... I don't know what performance, but the idea is that executive presence is one of those. And it is this soft thing that says, how do people experience you? Mm-hmm. Do they experience you as respectful, kind, clear, direct? Do they experience you as we don't know where we stand? Do they experience you as caustic and hostile? Those are all things that every human knows.
Yeah.
And so you just create that category to say, hey, it sounds like you've got a high level of interest in management and you're wanting more power and authority. And you feel justified in having that because you've really nailed these certain skills. And we want to validate your ability to nail those skills. Mm. But the conversation we had was not about your skills over here. Conversation we had was about what we call executive presence. And in order to promote you, that has to change.
Got it.
And you know how we'll know if that's changed? Based on how others report their experience of you. That's how we'll know. So if I were in your shoes, I'd get really curious about how do I come off? I would ask questions about to the people that are reporting about me. I would ask, how could I do this better? I would go out and actually ask those questions. I want to learn. I'd go take trainings. How do I have conversations in ways that don't make me come off a certain way that I don't mean to come off?
I'll send her to you, Shane.
Well, we did talk about extending this training after you've done it to other people in your organization. So this would be a great training for her if she was very serious about it.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's
good.
Great. Thank you.
So I'll pause there. I want to give Michelle a chance. We'll come back around to you. Anything else, Colin, on that before we?
No, I got a lot to think about, but that was fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, you bet. All right, Michelle, how you doing? I think last time I advised you to look at the Enneagram and some managing up, managing across stuff. How'd you do on all your homework?
Well, I didn't finish it all, but I have been working on it, basically focusing on that 90-day, the first 90-day success plan.
Okay, good.
So, because that's basically where I am, but I've enjoyed all the conversation because really I'm falling into all of the above. Not really so much, Brandy, I've been in your shoes. I just recently left a company, where, so it was not a fun place. So I do empathize with you. And Shane, you're willing to, I'm happy if you share my information. I'm happy to listen. You can have a safe place to vent because I know exactly where you are. And, Colin, I have those same employee. Well, my thing right now is I'm coming into a company that is ready to move forward, but we have a lot of legacy behavior and things that need to change. And so I'm coming up against a lot of resistance. I mean, even asking a simple question, hey, how do you do this, is like, it's being escalated to the owner of the company. And it's like, seriously, people, just pick up the phone, have a conversation. So my first 90 days here are really operationally trying to understand where we are, what we're doing. So that, you know, because, you know, I know Shayna says a lot that you want to try to make your impact in the first 90 days. And really for me here, because of where we are, it is observing, and more of what I can do will be done starting January forward. Even though there are some low hanging fruit and things that I'm participating in, it'll happen more in my second 90 days, really.
Yeah. So first 90 days is really about, in my mind, the soft stuff is actually the more mm-hmm. important piece. It's the harder piece to get. And so mm-hmm. things like expectations alignment, which we've talked about, is a series of conversations marked by misunderstanding, right? That's right. The definition of expectations alignment is a whole lot of misunderstanding between you and your boss. And right. that's normal and healthy and okay, but it's incumbent upon you to initiate those conversations. Your boss yes. will not know to do that, won't care yep. about it. They'll just assume you get it, go. And it's good for you to keep that regular check-in early on.
Yes.
The other thing is to just check in. Did you get a chance to watch the Enneagram, any of the videos on that?
Yes. I watched basically all of the 90 day piece okay. of the puzzle. So working on that STARS model and trying to understand where each thing, you know, where everybody is.
Okay.
I mean, we really are in between, turnaround and realignment. So,
okay. You basically have the two opposite interventions yeah. required. Okay.
Yeah.
So just for
yeah.
everybody who's listening, the STARS model refers to the first 90 days. It's a way of assessing how you should enter an organization. And, you know, for example, it's a very bad idea when you are dealing with an organization that does not think there's a problem. That is called a realignment situation. And their dominant emotion is denial. And so how you go into a place that is in denial is the exact opposite of how you go into a place that is in turnaround. In turnaround, that is when things are falling apart and the dominant emotion of the people is despair. And so what that means is the way that you deal with turnaround is you actually act fast. That's how you deal with despair. It turns things around fast. The way you deal with denial is you go really slow because you have to have a whole lot of time consuming conversations to try to get them to think that. And this, by the way, goes back to you, Brandy. The way that you go do realignment is you go, let's slow way down. Let's have a whole lot of different conversations in very indirect ways to help see if we can triangulate and help you guys understand that what you're doing could be way better. And so, so it sounds like, Michelle, you've identified effectively, you have one part of your purview that is in realignment and one part of your purview that is in turnaround. Is that right?
Correct. So mainly operationally, it's more turnaround, right? It's not so much run this drastic spare, but there are efficiencies and things that need to be done. But you know, in my world, being in a payroll, being in a service where everything we do operationally affects somebody else.
Yeah.
So, that's where the denial comes in, right? Because like accounting.
Here's my question. I want to make sure we're really mm-hmm. clear on the definitions. When you say turnaround, I want to make sure that's not you looking at it going, that's a major problem. The wheels are falling off and it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't turnaround. Turnaround is the people are saying, this is a disaster. It's a mess. Mm-hmm. We hate it. Will you please help us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That's what I mean. Operate because there's, it's like I said, it's not like drastic. It's just there's operational inefficiencies because we're still operating as if we're 1985 when the company started.
Got it. So the people are saying that. The team members right. are going, we need that.
Correct.
That is correct.
But at the same time, you have the realignment, which means the denial comes in as, well, we want the change, right? We want you to do certain things. Or it's the other departments that will impact by making change. They're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We don't want you changing what we do here. You know, we'll say,
yes,
this is pain. This hurts. And yes, we know that we could do it faster or more efficient, but do we really have to change the way we're doing it?
Perfect. Yes. Okay, good. So now we go back to video 12 of module one, which is staging the ascent. And that is the archetype of change management for you. So everything about, we've talked about this on, I think, your first strategy session. We talked about how change management is pain management. Even good change, even change that I initiate, is painful. You know, I got to move a house. I'm going to go to a nicer house. That's a painful thing. Like, that's a lot of change that I initiated that I'm excited about, and it still hurts. Now there's a change that was put upon you that you don't even necessarily agree with. Even if you did agree with it, it's still painful. So the staging the ascent journey is really critical for you to kind of get in your blood, because you're going to learn to have a series of conversations that prepare the way and pave the way to make change feel lighter and easier for the people you're leading and managing. And then the other reason that I wanted you to take the Enneagram is because I think what we surmised is it's possible you might be an 8 on the Enneagram. Does that ring a bell to you?
I'm sorry, repeat your question because we cut out.
We also surmised that it's possible you might be an 8 on the Enneagram. Do you remember that conversation we had?
I do not.
I talked about high bandwidth. I talked about you being a high bandwidth person.
Yes. Remember. Yes. Now I do.
Yeah, good. So what that means is when you're a high bandwidth person, it means that for you, change is actually easier. You don't experience change nearly as painful as other people who are lower bandwidth. And what we're talking about, when we talk about bandwidth, is emotional bandwidth. We're not talking about you just get more stuff done. We're talking about emotional intensity. And so when you have high emotional intensity and the ability to kind of create change, you are a change maker by nature. You come into the world as an agent of change. And that disrupts people who are sensitive to change. So we have two things going on. One is your expert understanding that change needs to happen. And two is your natural kind of gift in the world, which is to create change, to make things better, and to do it with ease and relatively fast. That is where you'll start to moderate, like, how am I being experienced? How, get curious about how open to change are these people on the scale of curious, wide open, totally closed. And once you understand where they are in those three categories, then you'll start to design your conversations to respect where they're starting from.
Right. Okay. I will catch up on that. Sorry, I thought I had covered those pieces, but obviously not.
No, you're doing great. Keep at it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I'm just giving you little bits and pieces of homework here and there. Take what you can. It sounds like you're doing the first 90-day module, which is exactly what you should be doing. And all I'm doing is supplementing kind of what you're seeing. You're noticing certain key areas, and I'm just trying to give you some support as you go.
Yeah. Cause it's all over the place. It really is all. And then we have new people coming in. Like, we just had a new individual come in, and she's all gung ho, which is great. But at the same time, I have to say, well, that's awesome, but slow down. You know, right now, things will happen, but not at that pace. So.
And that, by the way, just to help you prioritize, you know, I know you're overwhelmed, you got a lot you're trying to manage and deal with, and you're very capable of doing all of it. But to kind of help focus you, the thing that I want to make sure you keep doing is that you keep having that alignment conversation with your boss. So that the expectations are properly set, and so that the timelines are properly laid out. So that if the boss is going, go fast, and you know there ain't room to go fast, we don't have the bandwidth to go fast. He needs to know. She needs to know that.
Yeah, I literally just had one of those conversations this morning where, because I mean, right now they really want me, they want me going slow, and it's, you know, we want you to observe and see what, so I'm sitting here typing out, I basically told them I'd give them a SWOT analysis.
Perfect.
Along with resolution of what needs to be done. And we have a weekly meeting, and you know, I have 20 goals that are for me to have basically throughout a year. I know that sounds like a lot, but it's basically a year's worth of things I could nail out quickly. but they're like, this is a year. And I'm like, no, that's like 6 months for me.
Or 3 weeks.
Yeah. So, but it has to do with, you are taking a very, so I am taking a slow approach. So the conversation this morning was, well, I thought you had a conversation. I'm like, no, I haven't had any conversations. I'm like, you've asked me to observe, and that's exactly what I'm doing. Good. I'm just telling you what my observation is and where we need to change things. If you want me to have a different conversation, I'm happy to do that. Awesome. They're like, no. So
awesome. You're doing great. So the other thing you can do, if it's useful, you can take those 20 tasks and you can apply it to the urgent important matrix or the easy mm-hmm. impact matrix. Remember those two? Right. We talked about
yes.
this. That
yep.
might be
yep, useful. I have that written.
Yeah. You might be useful to play with too at some point.
Yep. Nope. On my list of things, I have my whole awesome. Notes that's on the back of my 90 day.
Outstanding. Okay. So
thank you.
Bracket that. We can come back if we have time. I want to make sure we get to the next person. I'm seeing an 812 phone number that's muted. I don't know who that is. Can you unmute yourself and tell us?
It's JD.
Oh, great. Thanks, JD. Appreciate it. Let's check in with you. What's going on?
Immersed in annual reviews right now. So telling people how good or not good they are. Having a few hard conversations with them, trying to focus in on not coming across too soft. My tendency can kind of be. And I did, so the nephew, I think I talked about it last week a little better than it was leading up to it last week, but I did have a review with the nephew in the business that's a manager under my oversight, whose uncle's the owner of the company, and working through that, I think we did talk about that all last week. So how he was a little just kind of stone-faced with that. I did talk to my direct report, the owner, about an Enneagram 9 type of typing and how that can kind of come across that way. He was definitely open to that and seeing how it was, but struggled in understanding how he could interact, and just that he knows one way to interact with everybody, and that's the way he's going to do it. So was trying to coach him with those ways of how to talk with that. So that was probably how I'm using what I'm learning to apply it right away. So
awesome. And then did you give some more thought to how written evaluations are different than verbal reviews? Last week we talked, or maybe 2 weeks ago, whenever, we talked a little bit about the importance of, when you're doing a written evaluation, actually softer is better.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
I don't know.
Okay, I'll remind you.
On that, or I was writing something down, yeah.
Yeah, I'll just remind you again. So anytime you're doing evaluative feedback, this goes for everybody. Verbal feedback, it's easier to be a lot more direct, because as you're skiing down the mountain in live and in person, so to speak, you can make micro adjustments as you go based on how it's getting received. When you put something in writing, it will be heard much louder than you will mean it. Usually. So one of the things I recommend you do is, if you write some comments, I want you to imagine reading it to the person sitting in front of you. And that sometimes helps you hear, wow, the way that I said that comes off pretty harsh. I need to soften that. And then what you can do is, when you're giving the review, you can dial up the intensity of it verbally, but when it's in written form, it should feel lighter. And the reason is because employees tend to ruminate on written feedback a lot more than they do verbal feedback, because they go back and they read it and reread it. They show it to their friends. They show it to their wives. And they can't believe they said this. Look at this. Who says that about, I didn't try. You know, there's a lot of defensiveness that can happen. So just some suggestions there is, use the written feedback to be gentler, and then use verbal feedback to be more directive if you feel like it needs a harder point and you want to emphasize it. And you can say, hey, it's written this way, but let me tell you what the subtext is. The subtext is X. I didn't want to put that in writing, but I do want you to be clear that when I say this, I mean this. And that way they always have the softer one to refer back to, but they've been put on notice if it's more intense. Does that make sense?
It does. Yes. And I think I do that right now because my written parts are just quick, almost little comments to help both of us come to the same conclusion, because it's more of a 3-star rating system where either they need improvement, they meet expectations, or they exceed expectations. Okay. And then it's an area for some comments. So I usually just put notes in there, and then I talk about those things just as kind of almost true notes. So.
Okay, cool. All right. Do you have, that's just a check-in. Do you have anything you want to raise that's new? Anything I can help with, or do you want me to move on?
Well, I was going through module 2 on the hard conversations. I got to a lot of the sections, or I was going through it, I think, even a second time. And there was the section of getting into the why of the conversation, or kind of the concentration, or why we're having the conversation, or our goal of it, and then also getting into the bigger reason why, as well as just listened to that this morning too. Those different levels of why we're having the conversation and the goals we're trying to get through with the hard conversation.
Yep.
And I'm trying to apply that to the hard conversation that I have coming up on Friday with giving the options to the manager on the way out at the location during kind of in conjunction with the review type of thing. And just wanting to make sure I'm going in that with the right mindset of the, okay, hey, we're wanting to move on away from him because he's not matching our culture and not following what we're doing, which is the bigger overall picture, but getting it down to maybe any subtext that might be there.
Yeah, good. I mean, I think you're doing exactly what you should be doing, and I'm glad you're reviewing the module, because that is the best advice I have for how to have those kinds of conversations. I'm happy to punch in on more specifically if that's useful, but I think you're on the right track.
Okay.
Do you have a more specific question that you're wanting to noodle, or are you just...
I'm just trying to, I guess, work through. I was struggling with... I understood those parts, but I'm struggling on getting to those...
The content?
Next levels of, yeah, the actual... Yeah.
What you want to say.
In this example. Yeah,
yeah,
what,
so I mean,
what it is that I want to tell myself on that this is, so...
Yeah, so I mean, for example, just so I understand, this is the manager who you know is going to be a floater, right? The one who doesn't have a future in the way that he wants it, and he doesn't want to be a floater.
Yeah.
That's the only option you have.
Correct.
Yeah. So I would just say, you know, make sure I understand what you're saying, but the way that I would start that is say, hey, my goal or my interest in this conversation is to see if we can find something that really works for everybody. And so everything I'm about to lay out is in service to that. See if there's a way that we can get something that works for you and us. So here's option one that could work. I know it works for us. So everything I'm going to lay out, I know works for us. But you get to decide if it works for you. And it is important to me that it works for you within the limits that I have. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I got that level of it. It's getting to the, is there... I think you were using the example of your conversation with a coworker named Tom, where you were going, you were trying to give up what project the boss assigned to you, and he was frustrated that you were getting it over him since it dealt more with his department. But what the main part was respect, and then it got down to, well, I want respect, but I also want to make sure this everything's going well for the company, or what. It kind of, you delved down a couple levels.
Yes.
I think that's
more important when you're dealing with a much more sensitive ongoing relationship where the power dynamics are complex. I don't think you have to worry about that in this case. I think in this case, keep it simple because you're talking about transitioning an employee out and you're also the boss. It's a little bit cleaner. The one I was describing was a complex power dynamics of a peer, and we were going to be in an ongoing working relationship. So I wanted to make sure that I was planting the seeds for that ongoing relationship. And that's when you want to go kind of the issue behind the issue that usually is where that gets the biggest ROI. And I think in your case, I think that first thing that I gave you is probably all you need to do, and then you can lay out the options.
Okay, that helps out then. Thank you.
I see we have Derek on. Derek, are you there?
Yes, how's it going?
Awesome. Do you want to check in with anything? How are you doing? Anything you want to raise? For the new people, Derek is the CEO of a robotics startup company out of San Francisco.
Let's see. There's definitely a lot going on, which is why I've been absent for a bit. The conversation earlier about...
And we what was can't the framework? See you, and that's okay if you don't want us to see you. I just wanted to flag it for you in case that
Sorry. I'm in the middle of getting ready to go in. I'm about to walk out the door, so save you guys the traipsing around.
No problem.
Let's see. I was in a conference in Memphis week before last, which gave us a lot of information. We had the most important thing that happened was we had a competitor raise a ton of money, which is always kind of an interesting event inside a startup. Everyone talks about it. What are they doing right? What are we doing wrong? There was a mix of excitement and consternation, which was good timing because, there's things we're doing right and things we're doing wrong. And I'm trying to sort that out. We're also in the middle of a move to a new office. And we're trying to do kind of our next two quarters of planning, which we're behind on. So Q4 and Q1. The big thing that I want to accomplish is moving our team from being, from doing functional planning where they basically sit in like quote unquote centers of excellence. So, a machine learning team, a control team, a hardware team, to being purely cross-functional teams that are focused on applications. So we build depalletizers, we build piece pickers connected to auto bagging machines because we've had good experience with this recently. We've always kind of had a foot in both camps. We've done a lot of both. And I've gotten feedback from multiple levels of the organization, including individual contributors that I just know because I started a company with them, but also managers and others that they really want to do this. And so there's a couple of problems. One is my VP of engineering, I think it's like a messaging issue where in terms of personality, he's the most positive of everyone of my direct reports. So he's just always about like, you got to pump the company up. Yeah, you got ups and downs, but you keep going. And he really likes to focus on, he's very good at repeating messaging too. So something I've learned is that I should have done more of is just like, you get your plan and you just have to keep repeating it to people. I think he does it a little bit too much. And so when we get a customer initiative and we kind of decide where we're going, he'll want to boil it down to just what's the top most important thing. And he'll message that over and over again. And then, so what that results in, it's like, we can kind of, from my perspective, it means maybe we could have done multiple things, but we're not going to have a chance now because you're constantly messaging, hey, this is the most important thing. 80% of the company should be working on this. And I've had people ask me, what does that mean? Like, if I've got my priorities and you guys planned them, you gave me a task to do and it's not on this top priority thing, what does that mean? Should I not be doing it? Should I be looking at something else? So I've given him that feedback and he's kind of like, whenever I give it to him, he's very reactive. He just immediately kind of contradicts and then eventually settles in. So I think some of this is just like staging the ascent, like going around talking to, I'm having lots of conversations with him, with my product team, with my sales team, about what we should be focused on. And I think the main kind of question I have right now is, how the hell do I get them talking to each other? Because I've had this realization that like, while I expect I'll always be the center of information, it's super painful. It's like, I feel like I'm having to be the bridge between all of them. And so not only is that painful, so that there's two problems. One, I feel like I have to be the bridge between them. And two, they often tell me things that they don't tell each other. So like we have a leadership meeting three times a week, short meeting, 30 minutes, where, you know, we generally go around and talk about issues. By the way, I hate that it's called the leadership meeting. I want to call it to the administrator. I want to call it the administrative meeting. But we'll have opportunities to kind of flag issues and talk about things. And we always do. And there's, you know, healthy debate and discussion and general collaboration. But then when I get in these one-on-one meetings, they'll say things like yesterday that VP of engineering said, well, the main reason why people, you know, don't feel like we're going fast enough or are worried about business success is we haven't delivered on the business side. Sales team hasn't delivered, just kind of period, full stop. And then the last time I talked to our VP of sales, and I was just kind of walking through, I'm like, okay, what do you want to do? We've got these 10 customers. Which ones can we deploy multiple robots to? He's like, well, a little of this, a little of that. Okay, address that concern. You know, so should we do this? Well, other people could do this. I'm like, okay, kind of talk through that. And then eventually gets to, well, we just don't execute. Like, we just don't execute. And I'm like, okay, now that's a fundamental issue. It's like, that's different than what your first two things you said. And eventually comes out and I'm like, why don't you ever say this? Like, have you ever told Kevin you think we don't execute? And then to Kevin, like, have you told him you think we just aren't delivering? From my perspective, it's like, yeah, it's kind of true, but we have stuff going. And so I don't know. It's like when I was a kid, I think I told you this before, if I went and told him my brother, I got in trouble. You know, yeah. My dad was like, you don't tell on people.
So here's what I would say. I think there's something between your dad and what you're doing. You are training them, and what you train them in is, and you reward them. So if you are the guy who, when they come and they go, this isn't working, I need you, you know, that person isn't doing their job, and you go, I'll take care of it. You've now let them know, anytime I have a problem with anybody else in the organization, I go to the CEO and he takes care of it. Mm-hmm. And what you'll need to do is start to train them in the other direction, which says, I am more than happy to engage in and support this once you first attempted to resolve it with them. If you're unsuccessful resolving it with them directly, then the two of you will come to me and talk about why you can't resolve it without me. And I'll do what I can in that moment.
Oh, you're so right. Damn it. As soon as you said that, I did exactly that with the VP of engineering yesterday. He complained not about the sales guy, but he's like, look, we're just not getting resumes or, you know, we're not getting enough resumes to hire people. And I said, okay, let me talk to Gemma.
Yes. So no more. Derek is no longer the problem solver. You've hired people to solve problems for you. Your job is to stay visionary. Your job is to think 5 years out. You need to be freed up from the weeds increasingly. And they may not understand this, but that is in their interest. And so that's the role of CEO. If you were in a different role, I would tell you it's your job to go figure that out. It's not your job to figure that out. It's your job to adjudicate things that they cannot figure out themselves. It's your job to help weigh in when you understand priority and sequencing that they don't have access to. But if it's literally just, I have some authority and I'm going to try to put some muscle into it, use that sparingly. Because the moment you do that, you train them to go, Derek's my fixer. I'm going to get Derek to fix my issues, whatever they are. So you just say, yeah, no problem. Be happy to engage that once you've told me exactly how that conversation went with them first. What kind of response was it? Whatever. And tell them, say to them, when you approach them, say, before we take this to Derek, let's you and I try to resolve it. Because that signals for that person, if they don't engage seriously in the issue, they're going to have a sit down with Derek. In a way, you want the sit down with Derek to be something they're a little bit afraid of. I'm not trying to sow fear in your system, but just enough that they're like, is that
well,
really
it's
the
funny
best
because
use
it happens.
Time?
Yeah, it's funny because it happens naturally because what happens is I overextend myself. I've got like too many things going on and then I get literally just pissed off and then they keep saying stuff to me and I get mad. That's what happened with my VP of sales, days ago. I'm just
and the great news is you don't have to have any emotional content about their complaint. All you're doing is going, good. Yeah. Sounds like you got a valid complaint. I wish you well. I think you know who to go talk to. And if after you talk to them and you let them know that this is going to come to me, if you don't resolve it, then go resolve it.
Yeah.
And if you can't resolve it, come and talk to me, but I'm not going to be thrilled when you come. Because I hired you to be able to figure this stuff out. And I'm not saying I won't help you. I'm just saying, make sure you do due diligence before you come back to me. Because part of my job, the way that I make this company successful, is that I get my head up to see far enough away. That is how I serve you guys the best. And if I'm the only one who can adjudicate it, I will. But make sure I'm the only one who can adjudicate it. And I want you to come to me with options and solutions.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yep. You bet. Okay, so I'm going to pause there for you, and I'm going to go back around. Brandy, how you doing? We're just going to do a round robin here. Unless somebody has something they want to weigh in, I don't have to go in order. Anybody have anything they want to talk about after hearing everything? Okay, no hands being raised. Brandy, anything else you want to talk about?
Sorry about that. My problem is kind of the opposite of Derek's with my upper management. My supervisor basically is absent. And last week I had a come to Jesus meeting with him and our superintendent because we don't have a CBO right now. And in that meeting, you know, I tried to address the needs of my department, like our staffing issues and roles and responsibilities and things like that, that are in the weeds, but these things aren't being heard by him. But basically in the meeting, he was just sort of gaslighting me the entire time. He was kind of childish and accusatory and just kind of usurping everything and basically putting it back on me. And so I'm like, no, I've been reporting this up. I need help. This has been going on for 2 years. I've only worked here a year, but this problem's been going on for two and I need help. And when you told the CBO before he left that you wouldn't sign my request for to fill a vacancy in my department, you didn't say why. And so that left my entire department in the dark about the future of our department. And so he basically just backpedaled on it. The superintendent was there mostly to mediate, thank God. He was the former associate superintendent of human resources, but now he is the superintendent of the entire school district. So it was great to have the meeting with him, and he kind of mediated. Finally, my supervisor relented after a lot of pushback and said he would think about it. And I was like, can you not take another 30 days? It was like a kind request. I wasn't like, can you not take 30 days again? Like, it wasn't like that. And he's like, he just responded with, well, if that's the case, then I'll give you my answer now. And no, the answer is no. And luckily the superintendent was there and he was like, no, you will be thinking about it. And I want to hear sooner rather than later. But this is the kind of like interactions I'm having with this guy.
So I'm going to highlight a few things here for you.
Yeah.
So just so I'm really clear.
Yeah.
You went to your direct boss and then you had a mediation with his boss, correct?
I've been going to my boss routinely.
No, I know. I understand, but you got an audience because things weren't working between the two of you. So his boss was mediating between the two of you, right?
Yeah.
But, okay. So just know that in those situations, you've got to be on super high alert for the ways that you will be heard and experienced by this person. He's already feeling undermined and betrayed the moment you walk into that room.
Yep. So I did understand that.
Anything you say must be at the highest levels of respect and deference. And so if you said the phrase, can you not take 30 days, that even if you said it super nice, will be heard as a slight in front of his boss. So he's going to be very resistant and potentially punishing now. So another way to have that conversation is to say, it would be really helpful for me if we could come to an agreement on a time frame for when that decision could be made. That is a subtle, as a humble request rather than a kind of a slight. And so, you know, a lot of the posture, a lot of the things that I would say for you now, and this is going to be really critical because it's possible that that just the request and the appearance of that meeting, even if you did it perfectly, could hurt you. And so I want to prepare you for that. So I think the module for you that I want you to watch if you haven't started it yet is how to manage up and across, because that's all about language and power. And I'm not even saying that I know you did anything wrong, by the way. I'm just saying that's a very, very delicate situation to be in. And there are all kinds of things that you might have said that you didn't intend at all, but are going to be heard in his ears in a completely different way because of the power dynamics of that meeting. And so, I want you to start thinking about what are those language patterns that I've got to get really good at so that I can even be heard by my boss. And that's where there's a tremendous amount of reading between the lines and communicating between the lines, communicating very indirectly and communicating with high levels of deference and respect, even when you think the guy is a waste of space and he's not doing his job and he's made your life hell. You still approach him from a place of, oh, pretty please, may I, is it possible? Like that, especially in front of his boss. You know, lots of affirmation and accolades in front of the boss. Hey, I really want to just start by saying, I just so appreciate this. And here's another thing I really appreciate about him. The more you give accolades to him, the more he's going to go, okay, you made me look okay in front of the boss. And this meeting, by the way, the request for this meeting made me look really bad. So I'm glad you healed that up. You did everything you could to prop me up in front of the boss. And then you made really humble requests in front of the boss. And you made me look magnanimous and you made me look powerful and effective. I want to see if I can help you. And that is the way you go into those conversations.
I can't say I did 50% of that, because I did start the conversation with compliments galore about his aesthetic design of the buildings that we are building, because they don't look like boxes. They look like day spas. These schools are beautiful.
Good.
But of course, through the course of the conversation, I started to get a little impatient, but
yeah,
working on that.
I just think for you, this is a place of awareness for you. This is, if there's anything I can do in this program for you, it's to start to dial up your sonar around how am I being experienced and what is my sense of urgency? Why do I, and you have it for good reason. Like, you see the solution, you know what it is, it's really obvious and it shouldn't be that hard. And so it's just like, I'm going to come out and say what I think is there. And all I'm trying to do is heighten your awareness to a highly political system. Mm-hmm. You know, churches, nonprofits, and government agencies have extremely heightened political sensitivities because it's so hard to fire people. There's no accountability. And what that means is you're entering a family often, not a business. So like when I worked with the Los Angeles Department of Transportation, we had to design interventions in these very wildly indirect ways that if I were coaching Derek at a startup company, I'd just be like, go straight there now because the culture allows it. But here's what happens in a situation like yours. People are there for 30 years. They're going to retire there. They're never leaving. They're not getting fired. It's really hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
That means that's your village. So everybody has to interact in ways that are really, really slow, indirect, kind, respectful, because you know that you're going to get sunk if the tribe decides one day you're out in the boonies. Like, we've decided to send you out of the village because our village was getting along just fine until you came along. And so that's where for you, to continue to put that hat on of how do I operate in the village instead of in the corporation, because you're not in a corporation.
Yeah, it doesn't help that I came from the private sector. So
it is undoubtedly the reason you're having such a hard time.
Yeah.
The private sector is so clean and tight, and the politics of the private sector are unbelievably clean and tight. Politics in the private sector, to me, aren't even politics, because I came out of the church, which is like the epitome of the worst of political realities. Even LADOT was adorable to me. I mean, they thought it was hard. I'm like, I'm telling you guys, this is nothing.
Yeah.
And so just know that this is my mastery. I know exactly how to navigate really, really highly charged political contexts. And the reason I know is because I made all the mistakes. I came in with my, laid all the cards out, super direct, wanted this, thought this, said everything I thought, and man, did I get punished. Oh, I paid the price for that so many times. And so I learned the hard way, all the like, oh, I got to be indirect here. Oh, I got to not say that, but that's the truth. But I can't say the truth. Okay, what do I do instead? All that stuff. So my heart goes out to you. Just know you're not alone. And also know that, this is not something you'll read in a book ever. So no one prepares you for this. But I can help.
That's why I'm here.
Okay, good. Okay, let's go to the next. Let's go. Colin, how you doing? Anything you want to talk about?
Nothing specific, just an observation to just get your thoughts on it. More and more over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years in this role, I've seen kind of that 80-20 rule apply to employees. So I'm spending 80% of my time on 20% of the employees. And so I just wanted to get your thoughts on, is there a way to alleviate that? And we do it from a, you know, customer standpoint and, you know, in reviewing our efficiencies with our client services and so forth. But internally, it seems like a harder, not that we're in a public sector, but we are a family. So it's a little bit harder to let employees go sometimes than clients.
Oh, yeah. You're in a high culture. You're in a high culture company, which, by the way, I'm a huge fan of. And I spend lots of time with high culture and I help organizations build high culture companies. That's why Southwest Airlines and Apple and Google and all these are all high culture companies that have huge results as a result. And so it's part of the reason you guys are wildly successful. One of the things, it's not true across the board, but it's not uncommon, is that high culture organizations have a very hard time firing. And so my first suggestion to you is start getting really good at terminations. And there is a module in a video in module 3. Gosh, I want to say it's video 10, 11, somewhere in the neighborhood near the end of it. You'll see it. It's pretty easy to find. It's how to have the hardest conversation, I think is the title of it. But it's basically how to terminate an employee. Okay. The process by which you do this. And here's why this is so critical. When you get really good at firing well, you are building culture. How you terminate is one of the most important culture building events you can do. And when high culture companies are out of balance and they have a hard time terminating, they end up compromising their very culture. And when you get good at terminating with a very high culture process, by the way, there's lots of ways to terminate that are not nearly as painful, that allow you a chance to build culture and to continue to refine the team so that you get a better team more and more. And so watch that video. Okay. And I want you to think about, what is our process? What's our policy? How do we need to make adjustments? Do we need to make adjustments? And are there people, I want you to list, are there people that we have let go, stay on too long?
Yes.
That they're just not right. They're just, I understand they're like, and there are two ways to fire. You're either going to fire because they're not a culture fit, even though they perform really well. And that's the hardest termination to do, by the way. You're performing great, but you're not a culture fit. Or you're a great culture fit, but you don't perform. And there is a category for that. And that category is torchbearer. So as long as a torchbearer, who maybe isn't the best performer, but they're like, they hold institutional memory, they're big in the culture, super supportive, and they don't demand a lot of you, then they're worth keeping, right? But if they're super, if they demand so much of your time, energy, and attention, and everybody else's energy is being drained because they're not performing, then they got to go.
Okay. I have both of those. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Yeah. So both, there are three categories. Yeah. And if you got a torchbearer, I'm not saying you need to fire the torchbearers. They can be quite valuable. But for sure, lack of a culture fit or lack of performance, those are the two things. So honestly, watch pretty much all of module 3 if you can.
Okay.
But focus on that, how to have termination conversation, because that is one of the pieces that's preventing you from having a more effective business.
Yeah, because ultimately, keeping somebody on too long that's not a fit undermines the culture in itself. Completely. One bad apple. So
completely does. Yeah. And everybody sees it.
Yep. And yeah.
And they're like, oh my gosh, I get it. You're a nice guy. Can you please put us out of our misery?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Michelle, anything else you want to check in on?
No, thank you for checking though. I think I,
you got your homework. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. JD, how you doing? You want to talk about anything?
Sorry, just a moment. I did have something I believe, and it might just be getting it out of my head even, and feeling this is a great venue to vent that, but was dealing with a new manager coming on from a different division, and it was one where she ran the show where she was at her previous location, coming into a location where she's got to work with another manager. She's not under my direct supervision, but she's affecting one of the people that are under my direct supervision as a manager, because they're working together in the same location. And she's coming in with the guns a-blazing, I'm going to change everything and flip everything upside down because I want it to look like my store and the way my store should look, and the store doesn't look like my store. And so she's overstepping bounds a little bit into it's a home medical division into a pharmacy division, and stepping on some toes. But my direct report's not having any communication whatsoever with her yet. Most of it, I think he might have some hurt feelings because he was buddy-buddy with the previous manager that was there. And then he's not necessarily been terminated, but he was moved off of that door and onto another area of focus. And so he's not interacting with the same person anymore that he's built a relationship with over the last 5 years. And they hang out outside of work and work with everything. So, but he's called me multiple times, kind of, I'm going to say whining about everything that she's doing and that he has no idea what's going on and everything. And so the best I did last week was I said, have you called her? Have you talked with her? Have you had a meeting with her yet? And he said, no. I said, okay, it's been a month. Why haven't you had this yet? He's like, well, our schedules just aren't syncing up. I'm like, to pick up a phone and call her? And he's like, yeah, we're just not finding the time. And so I kind of pushed further with it, and we got off the phone there, and then he called me back an hour later, found something else and was complaining about it. I'm like, what? Why are we being a three-year-old today? That's exactly how I told it or said it to him. Obviously, looking back at that after the fact, probably wasn't the best.
Yeah, or, I don't recommend wording that one. To use.
I was like, why are we being a three-year-old about this?
I think all of us on this call can relate to you wanting to say it. Yeah, I definitely don't recommend it. So,
but yeah. I said, I
thank you for fulfilling all of our fantasy for us. That was good.
Well, and you know, it's whenever you're in that conversation and you say, I apologize for saying this or this coming across wrong. And whenever you put those words in front of whatever you're going to say next, you really should just not say it. But
yeah, right.
And it came out. He didn't necessarily take any offense to it or anything, I don't feel. And at least he hasn't told me of anything. And I checked in on him the next day and I said, are we doing better today? And he said, yeah, I'm good. So I don't know if he just needed to vent to me or what, but I ran into the other manager yesterday as I was visiting that store, and she was kind of she was with her direct report and was kind of going on about, oh yeah, I'm making these changes. Aren't you glad to sell these? And I'm excited for the changes, and the store needed some updating and that. But it was also a scenario where she's like, why is he getting all his panties in a bunch and all this other stuff? And I kind of played along with it with them at that point, but I'm trying to kind of circle back around as I looked at it, self-reflecting after the fact, and going to have a call with the two of them today and just ask for more communication from her standpoint, because that was one thing I didn't get out, because it's really on both of them, I felt, to communicate. And I guess I'm just double checking that's.
Yeah, this is kind of the same advice that I just gave Derek, which is, okay, you know, instead of making the comment about three-year-old, you simply say, it would be my distinct pleasure to hear all about this problem only after you have spoken with her. Until that time, I'm not here to hear any more of it. Or whatever.
jobs. Mm-hmm. And this whole thing sounded super familiar to me. I'm like, this is my situation. But one question I have, and maybe JD is encountering this, is again, what happens when, so there's specific issues that come up that are discrete and you can address and have that common realm. But what about the general case where they're just not communicating? Like, I feel like I have to police how often people are meeting.
How do you know they're not communicating?
Well, I guess the question would be, how do I know they're communicating? I mean, in the case where they're not, I eventually like, they have a lot of conversations with them, and I'll eventually say, typically with my VP of sales, hey, how often are you meeting with so-and-so? And I'm often just like, there have been several times where I've been astounded. I'm like, meet with them. Like, that's crazy. I'm sorry. Maybe that's my version of the three-year-old thing. It's like, I'm like, that's probably crazy. Yeah. You're our VP of sales. He's the VP of product. If you're only meeting once every like 2 to 3 weeks, that's crazy. And then I don't know what happens afterwards. It's like I have to ask for a report card or something on meetings.
Yes. So it's an accountability piece for you. And it doesn't have to be super involved. You just simply say, oh, you're not meeting with them. I require a standing meeting for the two of you once a week. It needs to be a minimum of 30 minutes once a week for the two of you. The next time we talk, I'm going to ask if that has happened. If it hasn't happened, I'm going to be very upset.
That worked.
Just I was going to concur with that.
Yeah, and this is really critical. Like, when you de-escalate all your emotion, because you guys are both irritated rightly, like you're rightly irritated by adults coming to you complaining. And just so you know, it's normal. We all do that. We go to the power first because we think power will get it done faster. And I don't want to do it because I don't have the power. So it's better if mom or dad does it. And so I'm going to always go to mom or dad first. And if mom or dad demonstrates consistently and repeatedly, you know, my daughters, I will say to them, Harper did this. And I'll go, great. How did you resolve it? Well, I didn't. Great. Then go resolve it. And if you can't, come and talk to me. But I want to hear first how you attempted to resolve it. And then I want to know what she did to stop you from resolving it. From that point on, they resolved a lot of their own differences. I'm not saying I'm a great parent. I'm just saying, like, it's the same thing applies. You just need to figure out, what behavior do I want to stop? And then you set up the conditions for you getting involved. Your power as a manager is currency, and it must be spent wisely. So you're always asking the question, is there some other way this can be spent? Because I only have so much currency. And for this business to be successful, I must be spending my currency on only those things that I can spend them on. If there's anybody else who can spend the currency, they should be doing it, if at all possible. And if it's not possible, obviously tell them to come to you. It is a giant mistake to put people in Brandy's situation, which is the opposite extreme, which is like, you have no voice. Don't come to me ever with any complaints. Go figure it out. That would be a huge mistake. Now you're flying blind, right? So you always want to make sure there's a valve that says, if you can't resolve it or adjudicate it, come to me. Both of you at the same time, come to me. The next meeting we will have is with both of you with me. And that puts them on high alert, because honestly, most people don't enjoy doing it. They would both rather resolve it than have to go back to you and say, we can't resolve this. Or when they do come back to you.
It's interesting how people,
when they do come back to you, vast majority of them come back to you with, here are the options. You're the only one who can decide, because every one of the options comes with a consequence. And you're the one who has to decide which trade-off matters more to you. So we can do it this way, we can do it this way, or we can do it this way. We're willing to work with that, but you've got to make the call. I think it should be this way, they think it should be that way, you've got to make the call. Fine, that's great, no problem. I'm making my decision, we're going that way, and off we go. But they should be working for you. It's what you pay them for.
Theory.
Okay, we got 5 more minutes. Anybody else want to weigh in? Comments, questions, clarifications?
You mentioned something about the easy versus important, urgent. Sorry, what was that matrix?
Yeah, it's a great matrix for planning and prioritizing action in an organization or in your own work. And they are in module 5. They're outlined, but they're very simple. I'll say what they are, but if you want to go, you can grab templates and build things in module 5. And it's how to prioritize and plan action. One is a matrix that just creates 4 quadrants on what is important versus urgent. So you've seen that before? Do you know that one?
I don't.
Okay. So what it is you basically go, okay, I'm going to plot on a XY axis, you know, how important something is and how urgent something is. And when you plot on that XY axis, you'll get a map of things you should act on first versus second, and things you can delay. And the reason is because some people don't understand that just because something is important, it doesn't make it urgent. And just because something is urgent, it doesn't even make it important. So that's what you've got to, that'll help you figure out how to prioritize. So that's one way to categorize information and decision-making. There's another matrix, which gives you a slightly different result. And it's related, but it's distinct. So sometimes it's good to do both, like take 5 action items and plot them both on 2 different things and you'll get a different picture. And so the easy and impact is the matrix there. So on one axis, it's how easy is this thing to do? And then on the other axis, it's how much of an impact will it make? And so if something is very easy to implement and really high impact, that goes in quadrant 1, act now. If something is really hard to implement, but hugely impactful, that goes on act 2nd. And then if something is not impactful and really hard to implement, don't do it, you know, and so on. So you categorize and you get quadrants, and then it's a way to get alignment with a team. So it's worth doing as a team. You draw it on a whiteboard, and you just go, here it is. What do you think? Let's plot all these things. Where would you put that? Where would you put this? And which quadrant does it live in? And now this forms our action items.
That's super helpful. Thank you.
So go take a look at module 5 to get a little more detail on how to best use those.
Cool.
And I they're later videos. They're kind of near the end of that module. And Derek, for you, I still think it's worth at some point introducing polarity management to your team, because that's a lot of what you guys are managing are trade-offs and polarities. You know, you're not going to solve the problem. You already know that if you go to cross-functional teams, you've just created a different set of problems. They might be the very problems you're willing that are going to be better for you to be solving, but that's a polarity choice, not a solution. And if you find resistance in the teams, or if you find people over-idealizing a solution, it's really good to set expectations to go, let's all be really clear. All we're doing is moving to a different polarity with a different set of problems we'll create. And as long as we're all clear on that, let's hold hands and go together, see if we can get better results with this set of problems instead of the other one.
That's a super good reminder, because I think I am falling into the trap of believing it's just a solution.
It's not a solution. You're going to implement that, and you're going to create a whole new set of problems for you, which is fine. Just know that. Like, it's going to be much harder to figure out performance management, accountability, reporting lines when you've gone to a cross-functional organization. That's a higher degree of complexity in human management.
Got it.
And it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It's just to say, oh, yeah, okay. Our biggest problem is we're not creating good products. Well, we're going to create better products over here, and then we'll have a different set of problems, which we're totally fine to absorb.
Yeah, I think I need to re-review staging the ascent to just understand where I am. And I think the next step is what you described. So, and I don't know if that's a stage in staging the ascent, but making sure they understand it's just a shift in polarity or just not permanent or...
Have you already reviewed the polarity management modules?
No.
Make sure you watch those.
Okay.
That's also module 5. I think it's right before the easy impact matrix. Oh. Perfect. Get smart about that. And then we can talk about how you have those conversations. Because you're right, you will need to use the staging the ascent process to implement polarity management.
Got it. Okay. I'll watch module 5.
Yep. That'll be good. Awesome. Okay. Everybody, thank you so much. You're doing great work. Keep it up. If you have problems, send me an email. If I can answer over email, I will. If not, we'll see you on next week's call.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Everybody. Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.